Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Look, it slightly favors the right footer here, but Griffiths, having got the goal, goes again.
Quick five and tries it, don't know. Long wheel in front. Oh, what a goal! What a goal!
McCullough saved it in. Barry Ferguson.
Douglas again. And it's there.
And here comes up. Chance goal. Scotland has scored.
It's a goal.
Well, this should be a fun 45 minutes to an hour then. The Hand and Roar podcast, the night after, the night before, when Scotland demolished Ukraine 3-0 at Hampden. A simply joyous occasion, that second half was. The first half wasn't bad either, but the second was outstanding. We blew Ukraine away, and we are now top of the Nations League group, heading into the final two games where we play Ireland, massive game at Hampden on Saturday before playing Ukraine and Poland next midweek. So things are in our hands. I'm going to go as far as saying a perfect second half from Scotland yesterday. Ben Ramage of the SFSA and Alan Risk of the Air Force One Twitter account. Craig Gordon was a spectator, and we had chance after chance after chance, and then goal after goal after goal. Ben, how do you immediately reflect on it?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was a performance to be proud of. And it couldn't have been more of a polar opposite from that Dublin game in June. It was just it was a breath of fresh air after that last period. And yeah, I was really proud of the boys and proud of Clark as well, because I think everyone was quite surprised that he'd moved to a back four. We were kind of, when the lineup came out, there was a thinking that it would work. But the fact that he went with it showed that he wasn't as stubborn as maybe some people think. I think it's really good that we have another way of playing now, so teams aren't going to immediately know exactly what we're going to play. And it worked to an absolute T. So, yeah, just one of those glorious nights at Hampden where you can actually really just sit back and enjoy it.
We'll come to the plan A, plan B conundrum shortly. But first of all, I want to ask you, Alan, where does that rank for you in terms of Hampden Knights? A couple that I've got written down here are Denmark last year, and then, ironically enough, Ukraine 2007. I suppose England at Wembley was a really good performance during the Euros as well, but obviously it wasn't at Hampden. But where would you put that? And if you were to say it was, well, where would it be if it was in your list of best Hampden performances?
I mean, it's probably one of the best. In terms of, I think it's what will probably challenge a lot of people's minds is, like, they need to understand the importance of the Nations League. And if you look at the Nations League as something that's important to you, it's massive. It's absolutely massive. We're now completely, it's within our grasp of winning this group. And there was big results there in the past year and a half. I mean, that Israel game and obviously the Denmark game both felt pivotal because of where they came in the campaign and what they meant. But in terms of a complete performance and responding to a bit of pressure after the June matches, that is right up there. We responded to it. the fans were involved, the team were winning everything all over the park and just playing to the potential that we know they've got. So it was brilliant.
Well, let's talk about the formation then. It's been a long time coming. I think we must mention it on almost every podcast, Ben, that it would be nice to see Scotland implement a plan B when necessary. And it did seem that Clark, a couple of years ago, had solved the never-ending debate on what to do with Tierney and Robertson. But I get the feeling that that debate might just be starting again now, because Scotland were scintillating in attack at times last night with Tierney at left-back. Is that where he should be played going forward, regardless of the fitness of Mr. Andrew Robertson?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think when you look at Robertson, Robertson is a world-class player. So I think if he is available, then he's always going to play. I think
he's what's a captain brilliant as well, which makes things a bit awkward.
Yeah, exactly. So I can't see Robertson getting dropped anytime soon. I think what's great is that recently we've not been able to call on both of them. They worked out how to play together. It was working well. And then since then, they haven't both been fit, but we've still been sticking with the five. So I just think now it appears that we have the system in place that we can do both. We can, if they're both fit, they can both play. If one of them's fit, which with Tierney being quite injury prone, it's not beyond the realms that he's not going to be available sometimes. So it's nice that we know that back four works, especially with a proper right back, like really good right back options now in Patterson and Hickey. You know, that back four works. So I think it's brilliant going forward that teams aren't going to know exactly what we're going to do. And we've got the option to play either two brilliant world-class left backs in that system or just the one if that's all we've got.
Alan, where do you stand on this? I think there's maybe some immediate revisionism taking place. Maybe I'm guilty of that as well. That Tierney last night was better, even though he's superb still at left centre-back and has been good there for Scotland when he's played. It was amazing to see him in the second half in his natural habitat last night. And I think, not to be too harsh, I think that he performed to a higher degree from left-back than Robertson has from either left-back or left-wing-back recently. And this is not a witch hunt or an agenda, but just the way that I saw it, that I think if we are to play in the 3-4-3 formation, based on what we saw last night, does that diminish what this team's got to offer on the left side?
Yeah, absolutely it does. I think you've made the point that there's not an agenda against Robertson. It's just that we've, as a group, been calling out for a switch from the back five and been forced into it. Tierney, we know what he's capable of, but he's had this sort of new role at Arsenal where obviously he's almost second to Zinchenko at the moment. And Zinchenko offers something very different going forward. And Tierney's come in and he's started to mirror that a little bit. You see him coming sort of inverting a little. He's finding himself in new positions more centrally going forward. And we saw he came up there and he was putting crosses in left, right and centre in the first half. But in the second half, he had that pop shot that kind of the keeper saved and went out for the corner that we might have scored from. So he was getting into some really good positions and taking responsibility. But his passing was excellent. Like all night, it was excellent. And I mean, yeah, the crosses weren't finding the heads in the first half, but I liked just how we kept in making opportunities. It never felt like a nervy performance because of that. We were creating so many chances that one of them had to go in. It was just a matter of when.
It did feel like a matter of when, because Armstrong had four opportunities. I think two of them probably only half chances, and then he had two clearer cut ones, the header and the shot with the right foot that went over the crossbar. Shea Adams had two good opportunities with his head as well. Did you feel, Ben, that it was going to be one of those nights, or did you have faith that it would come for Scotland?
Yeah, it's one of those where you're always nervous until that first one goes in, because we've seen it before when we played well and we've not taken chances and you end up ruining them. But yeah, I think the quality was there last night. Alan sort of touched on Tierney. The thing I loved was that when he was getting to the byline, he wasn't just flashing it right into the 6-yard box every time. He always had his head up and he always seemed to know when somebody was pulling off in space on the edge of the box. So I always felt like one of those opportunities was eventually going to lead to something. when Adam's header hit the bar, that's when I was really thinking, right, this could actually be one of those nights, because sometimes your luck's just not in. But thankfully, we had John McGinn to just draw us out, as he has so often been the hero for us. And what a goal that was. What a moment.
One goal off Faddy's total now, I believe. Is that 14 for Scotland he's scored? Quite mental.
It's incredible.
What age is McGinn? 27, 28, off the top of my head. It must be one of those.
He's so, 27.
He's 27. So yeah. he'll surpass McFadden. Kenny Miller's on 18. You'd imagine he'll reach that, won't he?
Yeah.
Obviously, the guys at the top of the charts for us are miles clear. If he was to get anywhere near that, it would be quite amazing, really. Even more amazing if he was to get near Dalglish and Law. But yeah, even to get past Kenny Miller's total would be quite incredible, because it took him 14 or 15 caps to even score his first goal for Scotland, Alan. So his ratio since he actually managed to burst down the dam is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Gordon highlighted it on Twitter earlier, that I think his goals have come not within, obviously, his full Scotland career, but they've come within sort of 34, 35 games, something in that range. So he's got sort of like 20 contributions plus in like just over 30 games, and you're thinking, that's a striker. You know what I mean? And obviously, not a lot of people say that the role he plays for us is very, very different to most midfielders, but he's still a midfielder at the end of the day. And he's contributing more than the strikers at the moment. Although I'm enjoying seeing how quickly Dykes is also shooting up the rankings in terms of his goals, because he's now got 8 for us. Mm. So he's not far behind. And given he likes to score in bags, either consistently game after game or in braces for us, Dykes is going to have a few more goals in Scotland shirt as well. So
that's only him 2 off Stephen Naismith now.
Mm. Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's the thing about Clark's team. He's got them when we're scoring, we can score quite a good few goals. I mean, yeah, we're not as clinical as everybody wants us to be. I mean, a better side arguably could have put 7 past Ukraine last night. As you said, Armstrong had 3 or 4 chances, at least 2 of them. I thought the header he had that went uncontested, probably should have done better there. And then the one where he went through and skied it over the bar, I mean, at least on target, he creates himself a chance. And there was other opportunities. So we could have made it worse for Ukraine. But it doesn't matter because we won 3-0.
There was a bit of a scare. Maybe still is a scare, actually, because we don't know the extent of Patterson's injury yet. But it was a shame to see him subbed off. I actually said to my mate Kieran that I was next to at the start of the game how excited I was to see him from the start again for us last night, because his impact in the team has been superb. But for him to go off and Hickey to come on, Ben, it felt quite seamless. And all of a sudden, I mean, with Ralston at the back of that queue, we're really pretty sound in the right back area. It's quite incredible, really, the strength and depth we have at right back and left back. Gutted for Patterson, but I think a word of praise definitely needed for Hickey. When I put the question out on Twitter earlier, what do you want to have on the agenda this evening? At least a few replies saying how good was Hickey when he came on.
Yeah, I echoed what you said about Patterson. He actually had a really good start to the game. I thought he was looking confident. He was taking the ball. He wasn't afraid to try and go forward, which we've seen from him in the past. It was a real gutting of him to go off. But I thought Hickey, especially coming on quite early in the game, isn't always easy for a sub, especially a defender. And he just dealt with it so well. He's just so mature for his age, and his technical ability. He's just so clever on the ball. He very rarely gives the ball away. His crossing was impressive. His passing was impressive. He dealt with their threat in behind very well, because they were really flinging balls in behind early on, and it really was catching us. It was looking a bit concerning, the few on the counter. But I thought Hickey dealt with it superbly. And yeah, if Patterson is out, the likelihood is he's going to be out for this group of games. I have no problem with Hickey going into that position. You know, he's shown that he is more than up for the task.
There was chat of Hickey, I say chat of, there was a few people suggesting it was a possibility that Hickey could play the right side of the back three if Clark was to stick with that formation and then push McTominay into midfield, where he's been showing form for Man United. I think when the team was announced last night, we all expected Tierney to be the left wing back and it to be McKenna Hendry and McTominay along the back three, Alan. But of course, McTominay was pushed into midfield. He's getting a lot of praise from the fans for his performance last night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a little bit of criticism in the first half, I think, where he was sort of doing that McTominay thing where we had a bit of momentum, he'd maybe stem that a little. And I think I saw, just at the wrong time, Grant Jindal had tweeted to mention that he had the fear whenever McTominay had the ball, and right at that moment, he'd lost it in another attack. But I mean, overall, in terms of winning us the transitions and setting us on that way, he was phenomenal. But I think that's him being able to play in his natural position, which is massive. I mean, yeah, when I saw the game in the pub in Portobello last night, and I remember I was running 5 minutes late, and I had a look at the team sheet. Sorry, not the team sheets, just a list of names. And the first thing I thought was the same old 5-3-2. See how it goes. And when I first saw the TV screen, I thought, wait a minute here. What's going on? But I was lucky because I caught it after the 5 minutes sort of Ukrainian onslaught. So everything I saw was positive. And I was asking guys at the bar and saying, oh, how's the game started and stuff? And they're all saying, oh, no, they've been at us. But I think McKenna played brilliant as well. And in Hendry, as we all saw, he was phenomenal. So having that sort of solid back four just allowed McTominay to play his natural game. And that's when the ball gets us forward. And then pass it on to other players who are going to advance us. But I think he probably answered a lot of critics in that game. And the answer is probably, if you play me in my position, I'll play well.
Speaking of players in and out of position, before we move on from this particular subject completely, and just triggered my memory when you said Grant Jindal's name there, Alan, he was in the mention saying, how do we feel about Tierney at left of a pair at centre-back, Ben?
It's hard to judge because I've not really seen it. We've only really seen him as the side of a three, which is a very different role to just two centre-backs. My gut feeling is that Tierney could deal with it because I think he's physical enough. He's got such good anticipation that I think he could deal with the positional side of it. But as Alan spoke, the two centre-backs I thought were superb. Hendry especially. I feel like Hendry maybe had a little bit more to do. He always seemed to be the one that was dealing with the through balls, but I thought he was superb, and he's got age on his side as well. So, yeah, I don't think we need to really to shoehorn Tierney into the back two. I think there's enough options now.
Well, Alan, are McKenna and Hendry at the front of the queue now? Are players like Suter, Cooper, Hanley now going to have to wait until a jersey becomes available or unless Clark decides to rotate? And it may be the same with Robertson. I for one second, given he's captain and Liverpool's left back, I personally think he'll walk back into the Scotland team in one capacity or another. But how do you feel about that?
That's a really difficult question. I mean, you look at that performance and the quality. I know Ukraine were missing a couple of players, but in terms of the quality of opposition, we played phenomenal football last night. And we were a great side to watch. Like, even for a neutral, a lot of them really enjoyed Scotland's attacking play last night. And while I do think Robertson is the captain, that's his left back spot to lose. I think it's going to be very interesting what Clark goes out and does. He's probably more likely to revert to the back five to get them both in. I can't see him sitting my back four with Tierney and Robertson personally. Although I wouldn't be against it, but until we see it, I guess it's hard to tell how it'll go. But that's my thoughts on that one.
Up the attacking end of the park, Armstrong, we've touched on the chances he missed, but overall Ben thought he had a good game. Influentially was driving between the gaps. He played a couple of really nice balls between the lines, in fact just at the start of the move or in the middle of the move that eventually led to him shooting over the crossbar. It was one of those lovely sort of clipped passes in between defence and midfield before he received McTominay's back heel. It was a lovely move. And on the other side, behind Shea Adams, was Christie. Christie feels, at the moment, I don't know if it's just a Celtic fans thing, they all seem to love to slag him off. I've seen plenty of tweets saying, I'm happy I'm seeing Christie play for Scotland and not having to watch him for Celtic anymore. I thought he had a decent game last night, Christie. I certainly wouldn't have giving him anything less than pass marks, that's absolute worst. I think you're guaranteed to get effort and endeavour, and I think flashes of quality as well. The consistency of those flashes, okay, it's not always every couple of minutes, but I think you know what you're going to get from Christie, and I quite like that from him. I think there was one moment in the game as well where somehow he was surrounded by about three players and he managed to keep possession despite being shoved onto the ground. And at that point, that really injected the crowd with a bit of enthusiasm and a bit of belief, I think, because it was getting to that stage where I'm sure it was 0-0, and I'm sure it was getting to that stage where we thought it's not going to happen tonight. But anyway, generally,
yeah, I think
on Christian Armstrong behind Adams, did you enjoy them with McGinn a bit further back?
Yeah, I think Christie's got a lot of heart. He's a really passionate boy, and he always gives everything for Scotland. So the criticism, I think, is unwarranted. I thought he had a decent game. I don't think it was his best game. He wasn't really like pulling the strings as he can do, and his finishing, you know, wasn't up to the similar level, although he didn't really have that many chances. They all seemed to fall to Armstrong. I thought the two of them worked okay, but I still think that's still an area to improve. I think Armstrong, if he'd have scored, that would have him really, really cementing his place, having scored a couple in June. I thought his finishing just let him down. But as you were talking about, his little passes, he's always been a very clever player, and he just links up so nicely with everyone. And Adams, that I'm sure we'll get onto, also brilliant link-up player. The three of them were working really nicely. And McGinn's clever enough to break through. You know, he doesn't have to play that far up. He doesn't have to start that high up. He can make the runs. He's just such a clever player. So I thought we played very well. I thought the link-up play was very nice. So I think it's harsh to give anyone anything less than pass marks for last night.
Alan, where do you stand on Armstrong? He doesn't get many starts at Southampton these days, or certainly not this season, but him and Shea Adams seem to have a bit of a partnership there when they're attacking together. And not as a direct duo, of course, but in terms of being on wavelengths, they quite often look good together. And I think he does influence games positively for Scotland. We saw it in Armenia at the end of last season. Last night, I stand by that he was a real good driving force for us. And if he sticks one of those chances away, any critics are probably reflecting on his performance quite differently.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you highlighted there, he's capable of scoring goals, as he did against Armenia. And I think on another night, he even puts one of those away and nobody really detracts from his performance because it was great. It's quite funny, he gets subbed on for the other Armstrong at Southampton quite a lot. So I don't know if maybe the manager's just starting the wrong one, but he's certainly got that link up with Adams. And what we found last night was that the front three and McGinn were, the pressing was so good to watch. I mean, there was really a goal kick where there wasn't four Scotland players in the shot within sort of the edge of the 18-yard line. And that was almost, I didn't see a lot of that in the Ukraine game in the playoff. And it just felt, that pressing energised us so much. And that was every one of the forward players that were involved in that, whether it was McGinn initiating it and other players following that up and winning loose balls or winning straight passes, which got us, again, just back breathing right up their necks. So it was... it was a really energetic performance from the forward line. And yeah, I mean, he had three or four chances. He should have scored one at least. But that's fine, because on a night where you score three, other people pick it up. Ideally, he's frustrated by that, which he will be, and he can come back against Ireland and try and get the goal that he deserves, because he deserves one. But Christie as well. He won a corner. I don't know if it was the corner that led to the Fraser cross that we scored from. But Christie, again, was up there. He was all over the place, harassing, as you say, little one-twos, just being a really tricky player and amongst a good back four. So he impressed. Again, he gets a lot of bad press. I mean, he misses his fair few setters himself, and he's not been excellent for Bournemouth this season. But I think everyone... if anyone had a few bad passes, they more than made up for that in effort last night.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you on that. Let's talk about Shea Adams. I think he should have scored one of the headers. It's immaterial really now, because we went on to win the game comfortably. I think that, Ben, we were on the podcast the other day, and I said, is it too far to say that Shea Adams is the undisputed first-choice striker for Scotland, despite Dykes coming on and scoring two goals last night. I don't think that has really changed because they were both from set pieces. And throughout general play, Adams was really good at holding the ball up. He was linking up well with McGinn, Christie and Armstrong. And on another day, he takes one of those headers.
Yeah, 100%. I think, as you touched on, Dykes, they were two headers, brilliant headers, like not going to take it anyway from the finishes, but that's not going to work for the 90 minutes against a really strong defence because we saw that in June. It wasn't working. Whereas Adams just has that clever link-up play and he's got great physicality as well. He doesn't look the biggest guy, but he's very strong and he uses his body very well to earn contacts and keep the ball. I thought he was hugely unlucky to get wiped out the way he was when he was. It was like an American football tackle just wiping him out.
Do you think that was a red bin?
Yeah, I honestly do. When at the time I thought maybe I was just being hot-headed, but it's excessive force for me. It's not just you've walked into his line and you've tripped him up and you know you've taken the yellow card. I think it was excessive force. I think that was really, really dangerous, reckless play. And for me, you know, he wasn't going for the ball at all. And I know you can trip someone up and maybe get a yellow, but for me, it was the excessive nature of the force that I think makes that a red. And I just thought he was so unlucky because he'd done everything right. He was breaking through in on goal and he could well have scored from that. It helped us, you know, it helped everything about that performance. You know, it kept us going, but yeah, I thought he was unlucky to not score last night. The one that he hit off the bar, again, a couple of inches lower down and that's a goal and he's had the all-round perfect performance, really.
Well, his replacement didn't do too badly. Allen off the bench for, well, I don't even know, probably no more than 15 minutes, maybe as little as 10. And he left the field with two goals. And what is it about Dykes and Fraser? We touched on it in the podcast before the game as well. Remember they linked up in the Nations League a couple of seasons ago. They assisted each other for winning goals. They come off the bench together against Ukraine and Fraser puts in two brilliant crosses which are headed home by Dykes and they both actually paid tribute. Well, Dykes certainly did pay tribute to Austin McPhee for that in the mixed zone after the games, saying to Dykes, reminding him of the runs they had to make from corners where Fraser was going to put the ball and he had to be the one there to get on the end of it. And, well, did he?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm loving this sort of Austin McPhee link-up. I think Clark Gillies mentioned on Twitter as well that he, when he was at the game, he could spot one of the Ukrainian coaches just watching Austin McPhee rather than the team when they were doing the practice, which just shows you the impact he has. I think when we watched Dykes in the box and we watched, like if you watch the goals back again, you see each individual player's role in those goals. I mean, the first goal, there's so many players ready to follow up. I think McGinn just misses it and then McKenna's at the back post to get it in if both of them miss it. So that was going to be a goal regardless what happened there. And the second one, I guess it's just so funny. I remember watching it thinking, is that a replay? Or is it the same goal again? It was brilliant. And I think, like you say, Dykes, he's had a poor run this year in terms of goals for club and country. But it just goes to show that club form doesn't matter. If you're a goal scorer, you'll get chances. And I think he mentioned it himself. I've seen QPR fans on Twitter saying, can we please sign Fraser? Because obviously the rate he's crossing. And they're saying that the reason Dykes isn't getting the goals for QPR is the quality of the cross because he's always making the runs. So that says a lot about coming away to Scotland and he's got that delivery and he's scoring. But I think Ben mentioned about Adam's physicality and his performance. I don't think, it doesn't matter how many, Dykes sort of came on and scored four. I think Clark's post-match press conference, he said that the only reason Dykes could get the goals is because Adams has spent all match tiring them out. So you can't. He could have scored six, and he would have said the same thing. Adams is our striker, and his job is to give centre backs absolute hell for as long as he possibly can, and then you can bring on Fraser, bring on Dykes, and just bully them into submission. And that's what we did last night.
Well, just a reminder then of the situation in the group. Scotland are top by 2 points. Two draws sees us go through here because of the head-to-head with Ukraine. So if we draw with Ireland and say Ukraine beat Armenia at the weekend, we'd be on the same amount of points heading into the last game. 10, when a draw in Poland against Ukraine would do us just fine because the head-to-head would keep us ahead of Ukraine. But we want to beat Ireland this weekend, Ben. We owe them one. They battered us in June. It was one of the worst Scotland performances I can remember. I think Hampden is going to be buzzing from the start. I actually think that Hampden yesterday was quite quiet. The first half was quite flat, I'm going to say. It was fairly quiet. The atmosphere didn't really start to build until we really put our foot down around the 55th, 60th minute mark. And we had a stage of about four chances in a 5-6 minute spell. And at that point, the crowd got really whipped up into a frenzy. But the first half wasn't exactly raucous or full of encouragement. It wasn't until the second when we really started dominating the game and the crowd joined in the occasion a bit more. But I think from the start against Ireland this weekend, that might be a wee bit different.
Yeah, I think there was a bit of a hangover from June. There was a little bit of just trepidation. We don't really know how this is going to go. Ukraine obviously beat us quite comfortably as well. So I think there was a lot of unknown about how this was actually going to go. But when we started playing well, I think you could sense the fans sort of slowly coming back. And I would imagine, you know, Saturday night, it's an evening kickoff, so everyone's going to have been drinking all day. It's honestly going to be an incredible, incredible atmosphere. And I loved it in the post-match that Dykes actually said that we owe them one as well. And I just think that that feeling is going to be running through the whole squad. It was an embarrassing defeat in Dublin. And I thought that we kind of got away from those under Clark. It wasn't really a Clark sort of performance. It wasn't even resolute. Like, it was just, they blew us away. And for me, player for player, we are better than them. So we absolutely should not be losing 3-0 to them. And I really think they're going to have a proper point to prove, which I really hope they do it, because I think it'll be massive to win that game, just in terms of all of the confidence and everything that we've been building. It just took a dent in June. But if we could beat Ukraine comfortably and then also hopefully beat Ireland comfortably, I just feel like everyone will just have that lift again, and even the players will just have that confidence that, you know, we are still a good team.
Well, Alan, should any changes be made for the game against Ireland? And if so, who do you think might come in and who do you think might drop out? I think we can safely say that four at the back will remain for Saturday. I think there'd be a bit of an uprising if Clark went back to the 3-4-3 for the Ireland game at the weekend. So I think we can predict there will be a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, however you want to define last night. So who might come in, who might drop out, and also the potential inclusions to the squad given the injuries. I think we predicted maybe Declan Gallagher might get called up as a spare centre-back.
Yeah. You've got obviously the new guys to come in just for cover. I wouldn't expect any of them to start just with where they're coming in the squad. I wouldn't expect, although Ralston started the last game against Ireland, I wouldn't expect Ralston to start just with his limited game time at Celtic. So, and just given how well Hickey performed there and how comfortable he was. I think Ben mentioned earlier on that it's just his composure in that position. I mean, when we saw him against Ukraine in June, it was a very different performance. It's a much more composed one. So I would expect Hickey to stay there. The rest of the park, I mean, you would say there's probably a space in the squad for Gilmore to come in midfield. But I like the physicality of McTominay. McTominay possibly. But
we've not even mentioned McGregor in this podcast yet. Does that say something in itself?
it does, yeah. I mean, I remember watching the game and I didn't see McGregor for like a good while. And I realised it's because he's playing so well and he's just working away. Spraying passes. Yeah, like there was nothing to notice in terms of there's no misplaced passes, no errors. It was just it was easy for him. So in terms of midfield, you might mix it up there. Up top, I guess there's room for, if Jacob Brown was there, you could say there's possibly room for him to switch out maybe Christie or Armstrong. But we are quite light. I mean, the only person he might be able to switch out is bringing Fraser to start. Given he only played 20 minutes, 15 minutes at the weekend, and he played well. And I don't think anyone would fault him for that. I think Ireland's back line, they're going through a couple of changes at the moment. We're lucky that in terms of their forward line, Obafemi's not been scoring as much. I think he had an issue where he was trying to move to Burnley. That fell through, and then he fell out of favour at Swansea. And it was him and Parrott that assisted each other in the other game. Over in Dublin. So I mean, if they're not, they've not had the time to connect or whatever, then it's that's maybe going to give us a window. But I mean, if they started the same team minus Patterson, I don't think anyone would fault it because we played so well.
Ben, what about you? We've only got a couple of minutes of the pod remaining, but is there anyone that jumps out at you straight away to come into the team? And should anyone come into the team? Granted, Hickey will replace Patterson.
I think the only issue would be is that there was a lot of effort put into that game. The pressing that's been mentioned, that doesn't come itself. You know, there was a lot of really, really, you know, energy-sapping performances there. So it wouldn't surprise me to see maybe Fraser come up and just be given that role. You know, he's quick enough to do it. So yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Fraser coming in maybe for Christie just to give Adams a bit more of sort of fresh legs beside him. Gilmore potentially, but I thought the midfield worked really well. So to me, if they're all fit, I'd probably leave it as it is and just hope that they replicate the same kind of performance.
Brilliant. Well, it's going to be a great atmosphere at Hampden on Saturday night. I'm with you on that, Ben. It's a full day session for me. So yeah, I just hope that we can completely right the wrongs that occurred in Dublin at the end of last season. And if we can produce anything close to what we did in the second half against Ukraine, we'll be on the right path to do that, I'm sure. So great stuff. Always fun to reflect on a dominating Scotland victory. We've had a couple over the last wee while, but I think last night was the best one. So look, we'll need to end it there. I've got a bus to catch, get up the road, overnight bus from London tonight, the Joys. So yeah, we'll need to stop it there. And we'll reconvene after the game against Ireland, probably get together on Sunday and record whatever's happened. Let's fingers crossed it's a Scotland victory. See you later, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Sports Social Podcast Network.